know, we didn't never had to worry about that. So it's an expedient again. So what happened is that they not really cultivating a precept of not touching the trees and harming the trees. There's a reason for that. Because there were once some monks who were disciples of the Buddha. When the Buddha accepted his disciples. And they had a temple, and then a monk decided to trim the trees, just to trim the trees because it looks ugly. It looks unkempt. So the monk chopped up a branch, and it turns out that when he chopped it off, there's this spirit family that lives on that tree. And the kid spirit, the child, the son of the spirit, was playing, hanging on by that branch. He was playing, and the monk didn't know. Spirits are the yin world, so you can't see them. So he was playing on that branch, and when the monk chopped it off, the boy fell down to the tree and hurt himself. And of course, the spirit father was so angry at the monk. He thought of killing the monk, or at least maim him. And then he was about to do that, and he had second thoughts, and then he came and complained to the Buddha. And the Buddha said, okay, you're right, you shouldn't have done that, but he didn't know. So that's why the precept was created. You see, the precepts are created for our protection. Okay? So, for example, women have more precepts, it's more, you have much better protection than the monks in that sense. Okay? So, that's why the precept was created. And so, typically, like at the seat of 10,000 Buddhas, before we trim the trees, we would write a piece of, leave a piece of paper, say, we're declaring that we are about to trim the trees or the bushes. And if you have any objection, please let us know. And usually that's what we do, typically.
Is it just the person who cuts on the tree, or is it everybody involved?
No, the monk or the nun, the leftover person who trimmed the trees.
Who trimmed the tree is the one who takes the full...
Who break the precept.
...brunt of the spirit.
Right.
Of the precept.
Right.
Okay.
So, in a typical, like at the city of 10,000 Buddhas, usually the left-form people do not touch the vegetation. It's the regular, the lay people who deal with that. Mm. Okay? That's typically happens, but sometimes it doesn't work out that way. Okay? Now, it's a kind of funny story about the woman destroying a face because it's kind of drastic of a thing. That's why having good looks is not necessarily a blessing. It's not necessarily a good thing. But if she asked for advice, it wouldn't have happened. She wouldn't have to destroy her face. Okay, but that's it. Mahayana is wide open. Yes, there's so many ways to cultivate that for a woman who has wealth. Okay, who has respect, who has cultivation, okay, who has a teacher, and who has good looks, to decide to do away with her good looks is just a tremendous move, you know.
But isn't it, is it considered as a, in the Christian world, a sin to mutilate your body, like destroying your look or something
no.
like that? No?
No.
Nothing in Buddhism?
No, not at all. It's not compassionate in the sense that you're not compassionate to yourself.
Yeah, you're hurting your body. Right?
Yeah, but that's because. Well, on the other hand, yes. She's then decided to do that because then she would put the mind of those men at ease.
But it's their problem, not hers.
Right, right. You see, that's the wrong thing. You see, that's the wrong thing. When you cultivate, you look at yourself. Okay? Mm-hmm. Whatever other people do around you is their problem, not yours. Okay. So that's why she was wrong in that sense. Well, on the other hand, she has, by the act of giving up her looks, is such an incredible act that she accomplished the way quicker. Mm-hmm. She could let go of her looks. Okay? It's kind of interesting. Think about it. Are you willing to let go of your looks? I asked one of my disciples before, I said, are you willing to lose one finger to become enlightened? One finger. No one's going to know. What about looks? People look at the face, your face. Everyone looks at your face. And she's willing to destroy it. That's how unattached she is to looks, to physical appearances. So that's one of the reasons why she became an arhat very quickly. So it has always trade-offs. All Dharma has trade-offs, okay? I wouldn't teach her that way, but that's the path. That's one of the lessons she chose to leave for us so that we can decide, okay? Anything else? Now, you noticed that there was a dead cricket when we were circumambulating outside? Did anyone notice?
No, I didn't see it.
No one noticed, right?
No.
It wasn't there. I walked out there last night. I didn't see it this morning, as I went out there to cut off a rose. I discovered it. It's right by the kitchen entrance. Oh. You know those cement stairs?
Mm-hmm.
Right there? It's right there.
Oh.
And you go out there, and on your way out, you check it out because the body is mutilated. Somebody stepped on it.
Oh. Yes, before we got here or today?
Today. No, it's dead already. When I went out this morning to cut the flower, I noticed it was there.
Oh, okay.
So what happened is that he asked me to help it. How it's for its rebirth. That's why it's there only. Okay? I decided to go that way and thinking you probably would get crushed anyway because none of you will notice. And that's fine. So that you tie affinities with it. You only sought my help, not yours. But I decided to go the extra route because I thought you guys would want to create some good affinities with it. Okay? I'm sure it doesn't mind that much that it got crushed. Shouldn't be so attached to its body anyway. You want to hear the rest of the story about that cockroach the last time?
Yes, what
cockroach?
Because I never saw it again, only that day we were, that first Saturday.
You were at circle and blading like
right.
This.
Yes.
The small circle, right? Standing right there by the faucet.
Over by the water faucet.
Yes.
The water faucet.
You stayed there
still, right? The only thing that moved was its antenna, its double antenna.
Last week?
No, you weren't here. It was when you weren't here.
Yeah, she was in China, yeah.
Yeah.
Having a good time in China. Yeah. So what happened is that it was there when we were circumambulating, it was there, okay?
The whole time.
Didn't move. It was in samadhi.
Just
stood still. It's a big one, right, too? It's like about the size of my thumb right there.
Good
right.
Cockroach, real nice one.
Big size, okay? And
big eyes.
And then after that, Mel noticed that it was moving up and down on the wall.
He tried to climb up the wall a couple of times, but he only got about a foot high.
Yeah, or up and down, yeah. And then a couple of days later, I went out there. I walked out there to water the plants or whatever. I saw her in the middle where we were circumambulating. It was lying face up. It's dead.
Oh, on his back.
On his back.
He rolled over and died on his back.
It's right in the center where we were circumambulating.
Wow.
You think that the animal world, the insect world, don't know. They do know so much more than we do.
There were two ants when I was standing over here. I don't know if it's in my body right now or not.
I think
we
probably brought
it in. No, there's an ant colony in my house that I never really...
Need to talk to them, Master.
Well, Mel talked to them, they wouldn't go.
He put some chemicals. They diminished, they just didn't leave.
They wouldn't leave. There were chemicals, and then he put some chemicals, and I stopped them for a while, and then they came back. And then I think one day I got pissed off.
You said, I found them in my bowl, and I'm going to get rid of them.
Oh, yeah. I said, well, there are limits for my patience, which we learned about later today. And so I chased them away, so they quickly went away. And then one day I felt remorse, and I said, you know, it's a big house. I don't care, they come around, as long as they don't come to my bowl. And that's why I offer food to the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas. You don't just do that, you know, it's disrespectful. So I have my reasons for getting angry. And so I said, okay, you can come back. They're back now. They're everywhere.
Might have been gone 9 months now. I haven't had a ant in my house for 9 months.
Really?
And they're thick outside. They're walking all over the place outside. Yeah. And I have to step over and drive around them and everything. Okay.
So if someone else is taking care of these problems, pests, whatever, you're not responsible. You don't play a part in that participation of their destruction?
No. Oh. I'm not supposed to.
Okay.
Because that would be breaking precepts. That's part of your delay people's helping out around the temples by protecting, acting as Dharma protectors for the Sangha. Because when you folks do that, you're not breaking precepts.
Mm-hmm. So killing is one of our precepts, but we're...
Well, you're destroying vegetation is not a precept.
But with
of
the
yours.
Ants and the... And other insects like that?
The ants is something we don't kill around the temples. We just try to talk them.
But if someone else does it, it's okay?
If we ask, then we are breaking precepts. We can't ask you.
You can't ask?
No.
Yeah.
So you can't?
For example, when I teach you today about the rose thing, okay, I'm breaking precept. By teaching you, okay, by doing that, I'm also telling you to do that. I'm also breaking precepts for telling you to do that. Okay?
But you have to tell us, otherwise you wouldn't know.
Well, yeah. So I if I don't teach you, then you won't know. But when I teach you, I break precepts. That's the fact of life. What do you want? You want it all? You want to have a cake and eat it too? You can't.
Can I have a little bit?
Have a picture.
This is the first morning I've heard about not cutting plants. I understood the spirits in the trees.
Yeah.
But I did. This is the first time I've heard anything about that being a precept about. Only for
the monks, for the fully ordained monks and nuns. The shamis and shaminis can cut plants. They can trim them.
So it's left home person's precept.
Yeah, the fully ordained ones. Only the monks and the nuns.
Okay. I heard that for a tree or shrub up to a certain height, there are usually spirits living in them. So when you cut shrubs or trees up to a certain height, you have to pray to make offerings before you...
Yeah, actually it's not quite accurate. It got distorted. Actually, the bigger trees have the richer spirits.
Oh.
Okay? They're more powerful. Oh. Makes sense to you? Like when you have more money, you live in a bigger house.
Oh.
So you don't want to go to Malibu and Bel Air and get those people upset. Right? That's the analogy. Okay, that's why the bigger trees you don't want to fool around those things because the spirits there have more powers. you probably want to get on the good terms. For example, you have a house or a big tree. The spirits love fragrance. So you can offer flowers, you know, offer even incense to them. They would appreciate it.
Biggest, most beautiful tree on this block.
Yeah. What does it mean? It means that those spirits, families who live there, their blessings ran out.
Well, you can always move to another tree.
Someone has to move. If they move to a bigger tree, and someone else has to move.
Oh.
Does it affect the karma of the person who was responsible?
You probably are not making a friend. You're losing some protection as well. What do you think? The spirits who live out there, they have their own needs too. So by cooperating with them, by living in harmony with them, you're better off, aren't you? All right.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah.
Have a look at the Shivara, Bodhisattva.
Yeah.
Is Kuan Yin, according to some things I've read.
Yes, it's Wan Yin, that's correct.
But in part of Prajna Paramita, where they're talking about the skandhas, they say his profound learning or illumination and discovering the skandhas. And part of the time he's a she and part of the time she's a he. And is Avalokiteshvara the Sanskrit name for Kuan Yin, which is a Chinese name?
No, that's a Sanskrit name. Yeah, Kuan Yin is Chinese, yes.
Was Avalokiteshvara a very early Bodhisattva and Kuan Yin was later? Are they the same entity or is it a rebirth situation? I'm mixed up about what's
going on. No, it's a good question. There is a Kuan Yin or the Bodhisattva of Great Compassion is the Chinese name for that. Avalokiteshvara is the Sanskrit name for that Bodhisattva.
Pure and simple.
Yeah, that's
okay. Why did they mix up the gender?
There's
no gender.
Bodhisattvas, once you become enlightened, there's no more male or female. You become unisex.
So intermix is no problem.
Yeah.
Discussion.
Doesn't matter. Usually, the bodhisattva manifests as a female because it's better to. The females are better associated with compassion. She's a great compassion. She's the manifestation of great compassion. That's why, like a mother, like a great mother to living beings, that's why she's more frequently referred to as a she. But in essence, that's for the common folks. But at a high level, you should recognize that the bodhisattvas are called bodhisattvas and they have no sex, no more sex differentiation.
Okay.
Just like when you're reborn in Amitabha's Pure Land, you're born by transformation, not by by the sexual intercourse or by a tube, test tube. So, and therefore there's no sex. Differentiation. You could call them male or call them female. It's no different. Okay?
Yes.
Okay, let's. Sangha with great virtues, out of compassion, for the sake of this assembly and all living beings, please.
discern the wonderful Dharma will, to teach us how to leave suffering and attain bliss and end birth and death, and quickly realize non-birth.
Namo Sadantu Suche Doye Alahadi Samyao Samputosye.
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 The unsurpassed, deep, profound, subtle, wonderful Dharma in 100,000 million aeons is difficult to encounter. Now that I've come to receive and hold it within my sight and hearing, I vow to fathom the Dusgum One's true and actual meaning. O Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, Venerable Xinhua, O good knowing advisors, Amitabha. Section 15. Okay, we were talking about patience the last time. Last time we talked about strength or force. Okay, and we listed out five different things that are strong. One is the child's fear. Two is woman's hatred. Three is Brahman's patience. Four is king's arrogance. Five is arhat's vigor. And the sixth is Buddha's compassion and kindness. It's meant for you to recognize the kind of forces you may encounter. They could go either way. There's a nun who's very famous in the Buddhist circles. Actually, she's even more famous than Thich Nhat Hanh in some sense, because she's a nun, and there's some usually nuns are not as highly revered as the monks. So one day she went and saw a monk and asked for some kind of Buddhist business, and the monk said, "What do you know? You're a nun. What can you do for the Buddha Dharma?" And she got so angry, and so she made a vow to make a very big contribution to the Buddha Dharma, just to let these monks know. And so she went around and founded Suji. That's her. That's her story. She has no kung fu. They are known everywhere throughout the world. Even like, for example, in an earthquake in Panama, they would go to Suji and ask for money, ask for help. They would get a check before they would get it from Taiwan or government of Taiwan or the UN. Suji is very fast, very efficient. They are organized throughout the world. They're everywhere. So she's very well known. Okay, she even founded her own hospitals in Taiwan, among a lot of things like old people's home, okay, retirement homes, hospitals, and so on. And one of her Dharma protector is a man whose fortune was worth about $2.5 billion like 7 years ago, or 10 years ago when I heard about him. He gave his entire fortune to her cause, just like that. And this woman has no spiritual powers. Kung fu is not that great, okay. But she has a very strong supporters. In fact, her kung fu is not as high as most of you. And so what happened is that it became a charity organization instead of a Buddhist organization. It's a Buddhist charity, but it's known throughout the world as a charity more than a Buddhist charity. Why? Because there's no Buddhist Dharma in a charity. Nothing wrong with that. You have to have the vision to know how to do charity. Okay?
I have my first direct contact with one of their organizations this past Wednesday. Gave a ride to one of the nuns at the temple.
She, she has an apartment?
Appointment.
An appointment. Ah, okay. Yeah. The nun at Gold Wheel or Long Beach, right?
Long Beach.
Yeah. They
have free clinics.
Yeah, they have free clinics. They would go to the city of 10,000 Buddhas, bring their own dentists and doctors and whatever. They're very good in that sense. But so they practice giving, okay? But when you give, you also are supposed to give Dharma as well. Otherwise, they become spoiled. Okay? When you give, the Buddhist act of giving is that you give something to get on a person's good side, a living being's good side, so that they would listen to your advice. Okay? So you for example, a beggar comes along and comes around, so you give that person something. And hoping that you have the chance to speak Dharma to them, because giving Dharma is really the ultimate act of giving. Okay? That's how you give in Buddhism. You don't simply give. That's nothing. You give them, what do? When you do that, when you do the act of giving, what are you doing? You're accruing heavenly blessings. That's what you're doing. So in the future you'll be reborn in the heavens. That's about it. It's not complete. So when you give and then you speak Dharma, somehow you find a way to speak Dharma to them, then you're accruing both heavenly blessings as well as wisdom. You're accruing both blessings and wisdom. That's the act of Buddhist giving. See, she doesn't understand that. That nun did not quite understand that giving Dharma. So that's the fine. It's a fact of organizing, doing Buddhist charity is fine, but it's not complete yet. She has this entire organization, worldwide organization, of very faithful believers, devoted believers, who are practicing giving, and yet they don't have, they're not practicing the truly Mahayana giving Dharma.
There's a bookcase in the clinic and they're full of Buddhist books and Dharma talk books. Is that part of giving Dharma?
Yeah, sure. But that's not, you should understand how to give. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, by leading people.
By helping people, by preaching to people, by teaching people, by giving advices to people. At the right time, don't impose your views and your knowledge on them. Okay? You give to them so that you open the doors, you create the opportunity for them to come to you and seek for more. Okay? The fact they come to you and you have the chance to give to them, that means that you create a connection for them to come back. And they eventually realize that you have more wisdom to give as well, in addition to materialistic things. That's how you give. Alright? Otherwise, you it's no different than giving at a kitchen soup or whatever. What's the difference? The Buddhist Dharma is a little bit deeper. A little bit... even you also consider giving the giving of fearlessness. So in Buddhism we have the three kinds of giving that will round out the Dharma of giving. Alright? So That's the example, that nun is an example of using a woman's hatred and turning it into something really constructive. It's up to you, how you use the forces. Okay? You recognize those forces, you turn them in the right direction, it becomes very beneficial for everyone. That's the meaning. And we're not talking about the force of love in here, in those five, in those six, are we? Why didn't we mention love? Because love is misunderstood. It's mentioned in number six, the Buddha's compassion and kindness is the Buddha's love. Of course, with love, people can be motivated to move mountains. That's a fact, okay? But it's not, or why didn't we mention natural forces, like hurricanes or tornadoes and avalanches? They're nothing compared to, let's say, number three, Brahman's patience. Those Brahmins, they can muster more strength and more forces than hurricanes, trust me. Nothing. Spiritual powers. These guys have incredible spiritual powers. You don't fool with them. Okay, and that's nothing compared to an arhat's vigor. Alright. Speaking of patience, there are three kinds of patiences that we need to be aware of. Patience against under unfairness, patience under suffering, patience of non-production. The ultimate strength is patience, right? That's what the sutra says. And there are three kinds of patiences that you need to be aware of. Why do we talk about patience against unfairness, under unfairness? It's one of the hardest things to be patient about, isn't it?
Everything that happens to us that we don't like is unfair.
Yeah.
Most complain about unfairness.
At work, at home, mm-hmm. Everywhere. That's the one thing that gets people riled up, that start revolutions, right? That's how this country is founded.
Actually, there's nothing that's unfair. That's actually our own retribution.
There's unfairness everywhere, precisely. That's why you need to learn to be more patient. The more you can bear at work, okay, the more your kung fu will increase. Cultivation is not about crossing your legs only. Crossing your legs is only part of it. It's also what you do when your legs are not crossed. Okay? What are patient against suffering? Can you escape suffering? Nah. It's in your life. And we even seek it, aren't we? We cross our legs to suffer even more. Why?
To practice patience.
To be more patient. Mm-hmm. We don't talk about it, we do it. Mm-hmm. Right? Speaking of suffering, what kinds of sufferings are there we should be patient with? This is a test. Anyone remembers? We've talked about sufferings already in the early sections. There are three kinds of sufferings. Okay, what are they?
Suffering.
Suffering within suffering, very good. What's the next?
Suffering
a process. Suffering of decay. Are there eight kinds of suffering? Okay. What are they? Sufferings of... The first four are easy.
Age, sickness, and death.
Yeah. Birth.
Birth.
Aging, sickness, and death. They're suffering. They're painful. What about the last four? No, be very clear. When decays are the three kinds of suffering, that's different way of looking at suffering. In the eighth suffering, you look at the suffering of being apart from the one you love.
Yeah.
Or being near those who you really detest.
Not getting what you want.
Not getting what you want.
Being dissatisfied.
It's really suffering, isn't it? Okay? And the last one is the rage in five skandhas. Okay? So the three kinds of suffering is more general. It's more like what you have and you lose or decay. Or what you don't have is a kind of suffering. Or what you have and you lose it. Okay, that's suffering or decay. And the suffering of life process. Nothing you can do about it. We die. Nothing we can do. Okay? But in the raging five skandha is what? It's much more refined, it's more detailed. Because the five skandhas are really robbing us. Okay? Yeah. We have zero control. We go through. We know, even if we know about those things, there's nothing we can do. The more we know, the more agonizing it becomes. The five skandhas is the Buddhist Dharma. It's not available for the externalists. The externalists don't know about the five skandhas. You're confused about them actually. And what are the patience and non-production? What is that?
You know something needs changing, but it doesn't happen.
No. Patience and non-production is very important, the most important patience of all. It's the patience of an arhat. Non-production meaning
no thoughts.
Oh, no matter what happens to an arhat, she or he produces no thoughts.
It's impossible.
At this point, yeah, as soon as the legs hurt, stop it, right? Stop it.
It's going to be a while longer.
That's why you're training. That's why you cross your legs. What's the point in crossing your legs? What am I teaching you here? What does an arhat know that you don't know? What does an arhat do about his or her leg pains that you are not doing? What do you think?
Tolerance.
Thinking about it.
No, he doesn't think about it. He doesn't think about it. But how does he get there?
Keeps doing it.
No, yes, but how? Okay, the question is not well phrased. How? What's a quick way to get there? How do you get to experience an arhat state? By watching yourself die. Uh-huh. Legs hurt? Watch it die.
What?
Instead of moving, instead of unbuckling, you watch it. That's Mahayana Dharma. The Mahayana secret. See, I haven't yet to get all of you to do that. I tell my people, my students, to do 2 hours. Oh, I can do an hour and a half. That's it. And that's why I stop. And then once you get to 2 hours, I tell you to do 4. Or 4, I tell you to do 8. Why? The point is that I'm teaching you to learn to watch yourself die. You don't do anything. You watch it. Not documented anywhere, folks. Not written anywhere. Why? Because remember we learned about the difficulties, the list of difficulties earlier? Difficulty to face the certainty of death. Okay? Remember that? Difficulty? Now I'm telling you that watch yourself die. That leg die, and let it watch it come back to life. That's how you control your life. That's the Mahayana secret, boys and girls.
So you're destroying hope by gaining hope?
By not becoming attached to it.
Oh.
Know that death is such a scary thing. Pain is such a hard thing to bear, and yet you face it. If you don't do anything about it, that's real strength, folks.
And I don't even get to 30 and I'm in such pain.
And you unbuckle, right?
No, see, yeah, I do all kinds of stuff and then I go back there.
See, that's the thing. You are at the stage right now. That's why I talk about our hardship. I'm not talking about you. You simple god and goddesses. You want to know to get to state on our heart. Okay? Watch yourself die. Do you dare? I dare you. Master Shinhua never taught his disciples. I discovered this myself. Because I had no teacher. See, they are more lucky than me because they have like libraries of dharmas they can practice. Right? I came and he left right away. He only taught me one thing. And that's it. So I have to discover all these dharmas. Do not be afraid of death. And I challenge you to watch yourself die. Okay? And this lady here, she made it to second dhyana already. Just like that. You work hard. That's vigor. The paramita of vigor right there. You work very hard. Day in, day out. Okay? And I haven't taught all of you the Dharma yet of watching yourself die and do nothing. Go ahead and die, leg. Go ahead and kill me, legs. Go ahead and kill me, back pain. See how far you can go. Why do you think you've been progressing so quickly? Because we are much more vigorous. Aren't we? Your pace of your progress is a lot quicker because you are more vigorous. Well, it's really under your control. Okay? Any questions about that? When the mind's defilements are gone and completely so that it is pure and untainted, that is the utmost brilliance. When there is nothing from before the formation of the heavens and the earth until now, in any of the 10 directions that you do not see, know, or hear, when you have attained omniscience, that may be called brilliance. Any questions on this section here?
Is everything a defilement?
I'm sorry?
Is everything a defilement in our mind?
Ultimately, every thought is defilement.
Is defilement.
Yes. That's why we practice, so that we get rid of our old thoughts. In Chan meditation or in Pure meditation, you go back to one thing only. That's it, the Buddha's name. That's it. Before that even goes away. Then you become totally pure. That's when you reach the patience of non-production. See how they all tie together? Yes?
So this is more than, say like you said, Maitreya.
Yes, he has one portion of ignorance left. Then you become a Buddha. No, this is the state of absence of thoughts. All the mild defilements, all thoughts are gone completely. Okay? That state. Okay? What is a state? A state is something that you transition through in and out. That's what a state is. Right? When you practice, okay, a state is something you face and then it goes away. Even your leg pains are simply a state. The process there, you learn the process of being faced with the excruciating leg pain and not doing anything about it. Okay? And in that, you attain strength. You gather and harness more and more your inner strength. Okay? eventually you'll get to the state where with all those intense tests come and you are not reacting anymore. You give rise to no thoughts. There's a Dharma, there's the training process will eventually bring you there. Okay? But you can't simply talk about it, you have to do it and you know what this is about. So when the mind is pure and untainted, how do you get to that state of purity and being untainted? By dwelling on the yang side, by doing good. It's very difficult to be pure and untainted when you take the yin path. You can get there eventually, but it's much harder. Much, much harder. Eventually you have to cross over to the yang side. So the better to be on the yang side. Yang side is more pleasant. Okay? So certainly you can get there. Like you can take the yin path by doing evil and doing those bad. Eventually, yeah, you can get there too. Unfortunately, but it takes a lot longer and it's much harder, much more unpleasant. That's why when you cultivate, dwell on the yang side. You examine yourself and catch. And purify your mind from its yin elements. Does it make sense to you?
Yep,
okay. Well, eventually you understand. That is the utmost brilliance. What's another word for utmost brilliance? Enlightenment, the Buddha state. Wisdom, you the light is associated with wisdom. When you have wisdom, you emit light. When you pure, you emit light. For example, first dhyana is a state where your body begins to emit light naturally. Okay,
your body chemistry actually changes.
Oh yeah. It changes. The structure changes. You emit light. Of course, normal people can't see it. Otherwise, it would be a scary thing to do. you stand out like a sore thumb. That's a lot of hassle. You don't want to do that. Luckily for us, most people can't see it. They can't see our light. Yes.
So,
is that good or bad?
We're getting in the way of your own enlightenment. Obviously, I mean, you're doing good for them, but like if all the
bodhisattvas motivate themselves by relieving other beings' sufferings. That's how they function.
Thought, like, we have thoughts?
We have thoughts? What do you mean?
Like how we have, well, we have coarse thoughts in that say, like, oh, okay, so you say, you'd be unmoved. Like, say you see a dog limping.
Yeah.
Just like they probably see us suffering and they want to help us.
Yeah, they can do it. They can function without giving rise to thoughts.
Oh, okay.
Thoughts is that simply thoughts refer to the working of your conscious mind. Your thinking process.
Or they do things, but they're still in control of it.
They can function without giving rise to the conscious, the mental processes that we normally go through. Okay? In our world, the mental processes are the king, the reign. Okay? They're in control. They're not in control in the bodhisattvas. That's the difference.
Our thoughts are in control, but theirs are not.
That's right. Most of the time they're not. When there are times when they're caught in their ignorance, or they're caught by their karmic retributions, then they are controlled by the thoughts. They don't even know. This is what I explained in that lecture, in Sharangama lecture, in that last time I went there, last year. Remember? That woman, that nun explained about the Bodhisattva state and the Buddha state.
Their ability to overcome their karma.
Yeah, that kind
That's
of thing.
That's what the discussion
yeah, but, yeah, along that lines. And then she went on to explain about the mental state of Bodhisattvas and Buddhas, and she was so wrong. She had no idea what she's talking about. That's why I had to jump in right away and said, you going off a cliff here because you don't understand this Dharma here. I didn't put it in those terms, but because you're referring to a state that you don't know about. Okay? Because it's not written down anywhere at all. It's not meant to be written down. Even if it's written down, you can't understand it anyway. Because it's not, cannot be described by words.
The next weekend when you weren't there, and she got up to start the Sharangama class, she said, I still think the Bodhisattva can control their karma and don't have to put up as much as you think they will.
That's true. She's right. But what she does, what you have to understand is that ignorance, no one is spared by ignorance. Okay? Including Bodhisattvas, including Maitreya. When Maitreya Bodhisattva gets to where he's ignorant about, when that happens, he loses control. That's where the law of karma comes in. Okay? Bodhisattvas are not free from the karmic retributions. We break precepts, we pay for it. No two ways about it. Okay? We do something bad, you pay for it. That's why it's better to do something good, because the retribution is much better for you, much more pleasant for you. Right? Because the retributions for your bad karmas tend to pull you down. The retributions for the effects for your good deeds tend to lift you. Therefore, it's easier for your cultivation, right?
I think she was more than Bodhisattvas, even though she had mentioned them. She was talking about sages. Remember, she was talking
she
about.
She has
sages
no business
time.
Talking about sages.
No, she was. She was saying okay. Sages do this and sages do that.
This is where you explain Dharma. You have to be very, very careful about. You don't say sages are this, sages are that, because. When you speak Dharma, you have to know what you're talking about. If you don't, the way you talk about it, you say, according to Master Shen Hua, he said, sages and so are so and so.
Oh, okay.
This is a state that Master Shen Hua described. So you defer the responsibility to him, not to you. Okay, because when you say you speak Dharma and that's wrong, the consequences are extremely, extremely severe for them. Why do you think a lot of monks and nuns do not explain sutras? First of all, they don't understand. And number two, the consequences of saying something wrong is extremely severe. Why? When you say something that's stupid, what are you doing? You're giving stupidity to the audience. You are polluting living beings' minds. Extremely severe. It's better to say nothing. Okay? Or say things you know for sure. But do not say, go out of the limb and say things you think it's right. Because the consequences could be very disastrous for you. And that's the arrogance right there, because even if you may be studying the sutras for 20 years or 10 years, you only are able to penetrate the sutras meaning for at your level, the 20th floor, 30th floor, that's it. I don't care how long you study, 10 years, 20 years, 20 lifetimes. if you do not, your kung fu does not raise below, above whatever you have, that's the zone you can penetrate. Right? It's not the amount of time you invest in it. It's how deep you can get. Right? And so that's why when you cultivation, be extremely careful about arrogance. Do not think you know. There's so much you don't know. Look at the structure of the teachings here so far. The last 2 months, I taught you a lot of concepts. You don't even know how they are interconnected. I need to reveal them to you bit by bit, bit by bit. You don't even remember what the eight sufferings are. They're taught to you because for a reason. Okay? And you have to be patient. And let it unfold itself bit by bit, bit by bit. It takes time. That's why you need to do both. You need to practice your kung fu and learn the wisdom part as well. For you to be balanced. Alright? When there is nothing from before the formation of heaven and earth until now, when you're free from space in the ten direct and you do not see, know or hear, your wisdom transcends space and time. That's the utmost brilliance. Okay? No, that's a state of enlightenment.
What does that say? What is that? It's really, there's, that means you don't think of that anymore? Is that what that's saying? That your mind becomes blank and clear and you don't even have to think about the universe?
No, you're still stuck at that. What deception refers to is that you are free from, you are transcend from, you're no longer constrained by space or time. Formation of heaven and earth until now, meaning time. Ten direction, meaning space.
Don't I live in space and time? We all live.
Your current body lives in space and time.
Yeah, well, yes,
but your wisdom, your Buddha nature transcends space and time.
But my mind and my
Your enlightened nature is not constrained by space or time. Okay?
Okay.
When you become enlightened, you have the wisdom that transcends time and space. And that's true brilliance. Right? Omniscience is the knowledge, is nothing you don't know, including marriage or relationships. Isn't that funny how you give up marriage and relationship, eventually you get to, so that you can develop a knowledge quicker? Section 16, casting aside love and attaining the way. The Buddha said, people who cherish love and desire do not see the way, just as when you stir clear water with your hand. Those who stand beside it cannot see their reflections. So, two, people are entangled in love and desire, have turbidity in their minds, and therefore they cannot see the way. You, Shramana, should cast aside love and desire. When the stains of love and desire disappear, you will be able to see the way. The last section we talked about brilliance and strength. You need strength to sustain your efforts, right? And brilliance is the wisdom to guide you in your process. This is the Buddha's revelation that we have a hidden treasure. Okay? Our nature is basically is inherently pure and clear already. So the process of cultivation involves dusting ourselves, purifying ourselves, so that we go back to our original pure and clear nature. And how do you do that? The biggest obstacle in the way is love and desire. Love and desire. Any questions about that? Any objections? Let me ask you this. Can you be calm and at peace with sexual desire, with sexual excitement? Can you? So you cross your legs for a long, long time and then you indulge in sexual desire. Can you destroy your state of samadhi? That's it? Any questions about this? Any objections to this?
If I'm watching myself die, then I'm casting aside those two things.
Precisely.
Because they're not important if I'm dying.
Watch those thoughts die. See, don't take my instruction literally. If you do it like that, then eventually you have to go to the next step. Okay? All those things, all those states appear, you watch them come and go. Watch them be born and die. Be born and die. Just like you. So what's to be attached? Does it to the rest of you?
I was born with nothing, I live with nothing.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. That's what that woman who destroyed her face understood before she became enlightened. Just think about it. What else can be more personal than your face, your good looks? You look at yourself every morning in the mirror, don't you? Don't you want to look at something pleasant? And yet she destroyed it. She's no longer attached to her own appearance. That's the Dharma she taught us. Right? So basically, your nature is pure and clear already. It's because all these excitements, all these thoughts, these stray thoughts keep on coming, popping up. And that's why it's like the water being agitated. If you learn to control those thoughts and not add to them, not add fuel to the fire, then those thoughts will die by themselves quicker. And the water, just like the waves, eventually will die off. And the water becomes clear, calm and clear again. That's the state of enlightenment. Okay? And the primary force for those creation of the waves is love and desire. So I submit to you that the next time you see a left-home person, you should be more respectful, because these folks do know a little bit more than you do, in a sense that they chose a path and says, this is what I'm going to be dealing with directly. I'm going to face these things head on. Okay? So maybe the Kung Fu is not there yet. Maybe the Kung Fu is maybe lower than yours, but their commitment is deeper than yours. That deserves respect, doesn't it? As long as you indulge in thoughts of love and desire, you cannot. You're creating waves in your pond. How more plainly can I put it to you? The Buddha put it that way, section 16 right here. You are simply stirring your own problems, stirring up your own problems. That's a fact. What do you mean?
I don't mean the sexual part of it. I mean the mother's love for child after the child is among the family is very strong.
Yeah.
Commonly well known.
Yeah.
And so that is a thing that a very large defilement, then, isn't it?
Yeah. It's a very strong attachment.
Yes, a very strong.
She can't cultivate.
Can't.
You sit there and practices, and then the thought comes, oh, I need to take care of her meal. That's it.
Yep.
Up, you stand up, and you off you go.
And you get some anger and some hatred and some ignorance and stupidity.
So that's part of our settlement of debts, okay? Or creation of merit and virtues. It depends. But when you cultivate, cultivation process is the process of identifying those things that will stir up your mind. That's what deception is about. And the two groups are love and desire. Those are the biggest troublemakers. And that includes love for your children. That's why I left before they shave their head and say, okay, I renounce you. I'm sorry. This is what my past is going to be. I need to save myself first. Because my mind is unclear. I can't save you. Okay?
It's easier to do in the winter than the summer because the girls wear more clothes. You didn't make that, did you?
Section 17. When light arrives, darkness departs. The Buddha said, those who see the way are like someone holding a torch who enters a dark room, dispelling the darkness so that only light remains. When you study the way and see the truth, ignorance vanishes and light remains forever. The nice thing about this section is that the simplicity of the process. Once you understand, all processes, all instructions are very straightforward, very simple. Okay? The fact of cultivation is simply you bring a torch into a dark room and light it up. It can't be any simpler than that. Darkness is ignorance. Darkness is hatred. Darkness is anger. Darkness is lust. Darkness is jealousy, right? The yin things that you do not wish to reveal to others, that's darkness. Those dark corners in your mind, your private lives, that's darkness. You want them to be dark, okay? Cultivation, you bring the light and light up all those areas. Why? You see clearer. You keep it dark because you do not want to face it. You want to be ignored. You want to still be ignorant about these things. It gets scarier and scarier, folks. There are fewer places for you to hide.
Does ignorance, the comment ignorance vanishes, mean getting rid of the thought completely, or just understanding that that's something that is an ignorant thing to do or think?
Run that by me one more time. Excuse me.
It says ignorance vanishes, which implies that your mind won't think of that anymore. Does it mean that, or does it mean that once you see the truth? And even though you're still not living it, you see it and you understand it's wrong.
You're still debating it intellectually. The process of being described here is very, very physical. You bring a light, a torch into a dark room.
I do everything I told you.
That's it. That's all you do. See the beauty of the teaching here? See, you're discussing it intellectually. The process here is very physical. You take a torch, again, bring it to where it's dark. Talk about it. You don't describe it, you do it. Isn't that beautiful, the teaching?
Okay.
Huh?
Okay.
See, we tend to discuss it. We say, oh, I'm not sure I understand, so how do I do it? No, it's nothing to do. You take a torch and you bring it to a dark area.
And it lights up.
It lights out. No place to hide.
So the point is not knowing the truth, it's seeing it.
It's doing it. It's taking a torch and bringing it to where it's dark. That's the beauty of the practice right there. Isn't that? It's so fantastic. It is so, to me, it's so ingenious.
So as long as it's in the dark, we're ignoring it.
That's right.
Yeah.
You are confused.
And the brighter the light gets, the more advanced and better off you are. The better off you understand the way.
You have to have access to a torch. Okay? That is what? Your samadhi power, isn't it? I just told you you emit light. Don't you?
Yes.
So if you, as long as you're in samadhi, what are you doing? You're emitting light. Aren't you? So aren't you shedding light on your darkness, on your ignorance?
Yes.
Can you become enlightened without samadhi? You know why? You see why the chan training is so important? You see why crossing your legs is so important? Because crossing your legs helps you get into samadhi easier. When you're in samadhi, you're shedding light into your dark corners. The dark corner is your mind. That's what you're doing. And not only that, when you come together like this in a Dharma assembly like this, when you emit light, you're emitting light for everyone else as well. You emit light around your house, you emit light in the dark corners of the people around you as well. Aren't you? So don't think because you're investing time in crossing your legs and taking time away from work and making money and spending time with your family, you're being selfish. You're benefiting your family already because you're shedding light on their ignorance, whether they're aware of it or not. Giving already. You're giving the light of wisdom. Practicing giving without giving. Aren't you? So I teach you, I train you to do these things so that you don't become attached to doing these things. You do all these things already and you don't even know. You're giving wisdom already. You're shedding light already. You're sharing your light already. So when you are in your yin moods, what are you doing? You no longer are shining, emitting light. You're not helping anyone, least of all yourself. Alright? And the thing here is that he reminds you, because the Buddha is so kind and compassionate. He says the process is very simple. You bring light into a dark room. Dark room represents, symbolizes ignorance. The light comes in. The darkness goes away. It's nothing to do. It's that simple. You shine a light on the dark area and the ignorance goes away. It's that simple. Nothing, not big deal about it. But then he says, he reminds you that you need to study the way. Why? Because samadhi power is not enough. You need to know where it's dark. See, when you live in the dark, you use the darkness, you don't even know anymore. Isn't that right? You go to the Soviet Union, or you go to Vietnam, for example, the standard of living in Vietnam is much lower than here. You know, I go into Taiwan and the toilet there is like a hole on the floor. I'm sorry, I did not mean to put down Taiwanese people. China. Same thing in Vietnam, China too. Here we use the sitting on a toilet bowl. Over there they sat on the feet. Okay?
Japan too.
So yeah, different customs are different. And so we're used to it. Okay? So when I went back to Taiwan several years ago, I was shocked. I said, wow, this is what I used to do in Vietnam. And they still do it. Okay? For us, it's a shock. For them, it's same thing. Darkness is the same thing. I'm not saying that sitting on a going toilet that way is being ignored. Okay, I'm just saying using that example as an analogy to say that if you're used doing yin things, you're used to living in darkness. You're so used to darkness that you don't even know it's dark anymore. That's why you need to study. Okay? And see the truth. Ignorance vanishes and light remains forever. Oh, so simple. Any questions? Section 18. Thoughts and so forth are basically empty, Buddha said. My Dharma is a mindfulness of both mindfulness and non-mindfulness. It is a practice that is both practice and non-practice. It is words that are words and non-words. And cultivation, that is cultivation and non-cultivation. What is this nonsense here?
Yes and no.
He talks with both sides of his mouth at the same time.
The dualistic middle way definition.
What does it mean? What is this about?
Everything is in balance.
No, it's duality. His Dharma is transcends duality.
Yes.
But that's nature, though. The yin and yang.
No.
You cannot have one without the other.
That's true. It's only a manifestation of your Dharma nature, your Buddha nature. Okay? Your Buddha nature is basically true emptiness, is nothing in it. And then the duality is something that manifests from that, that arises from that.
Taoist belief that the yin and yang, but in the true Buddha and yang, come from the Buddha nature. But it's called a true emptiness, but it's really not true emptiness, it's everything. And
that's
like
the
emptiness, emptiness is form. That's
a concept. That's a concept of true emptiness and wonderful existence. Okay? That you will be covered later. The Buddha Dharma is a deeper level, much deeper level than a Taoist concept of yin and yang. Yin and yang is only to relate to you. Okay? To connect to you through your attachments. You attach to either yin or yang. Or both. Okay? We connect to you through your attachment and then we help you let go of that attachment. Okay, you don't understand true emptiness anyway. Yeah, you can only approach it through gradual cultivation.
Doesn't that say emptiness though, when it's there is, there isn't, there is, there isn't, there is, there isn't? That's emptiness, isn't it?
Precisely. Very good.
Yes.
He's the first one who understands the process. You see? You guys don't understand it yet because he's much higher level. He understands. How can it be yes and no at the same time?
Because it is.
Because
it is.
Because we discriminate. That's why we can't see it. You know, we have to have something
is. You can only have something that is and is not at the same time only if you have true emptiness. I'm not talking about emptiness here. I'm not talking about empty air here, empty space here. I'm not talking about the space here, spatial out there, okay? The void out there. The vacuum out there in space. I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking beyond that. Because that is still falls within the realm of duality. You have something that's void and something that's not void. Okay? And therefore, you could either have either or. Alright? True emptiness is and is not at the same time.
It's matter and antimatter. Matter and antimatter cancel each other and leave nothing.
It takes time to get there. What do you think? Because right now it's so important to you, is it so important to you? Or is not it so important to you? You're still attached to is.
That
is not.
That is not.
You're still attached to those concepts. It's so important to you. Love is so important to you. Having children is so important to you. Having a family is so important to you. That's is. Right?
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
And the more you cultivate, the less is becomes less and less important. Alright? So, the mindfulness that is taught in the Theravadan tradition is really pretty good mindfulness. But then they stuck with mindfulness. They haven't let go of the non-mindfulness yet, of the mindfulness yet. They still stuck with that. That's why when the Buddha said mindfulness and non-mindfulness is that you are mindful, but then you are not attached to being mindful. That's what is meant by non-mindfulness. See, I read these things years ago. I didn't understand because it's nonsense. How can it be is and is not at the same time? It can't. It's nonsense. I was stuck on this for years and years and years.
Is all the
mindfulness. The wording cannot, if you read this, you cannot understand what it means. What it really means is that you are mindful, you practice the Dharma of mindfulness, but you are not attached to it. Alright? You practice, but you are not attached to it. Attached to your practice.
Practice, and you're not attached to your practice.
You practice to the ultimate point where you no longer are attached to your practice. For example, for you right now, practice is every day I have 8 hours of sleep, I have a few hours to eat and take care of my body, and I cross my legs for 1 hour. Right? That's practice. Right? Not even maybe 1 hour is too much. Maybe 15 minutes.
Yes.
Okay, that'd be reasonable, okay? 15 is asking too much already, right?
10.
Okay, 10. I set up for 10. So you still have this discrimination. You said something called practice, which is desirable to me. I know it's very desirable, but I can't. I don't have enough time. Okay? Don't remind me about it because it makes you feel guilty. Okay. And you get better and you shave your head and you say, okay, I practice, this is my full-time job. So I eat 8 hours a day. Okay, that's my personal time. I shower and eat and I sleep 8 hours and I shower. This is a normal level person. I'm not talking Master Srinivasa disciples, okay? They sleep a lot less. And I eat and I and so on. So I practice 8 hours a day. That's full-time, maybe 10 hours a day. Okay? That's still practice. Isn't it?
Yeah.
And you say, I'm committed to 10 hours of practice a day, and this is my life. This is what I'm about. So what does it say? I'm still practicing. I see something called practice.
Yeah.
Right? It's important. That's good, and all those good things. But it's still practice. Something in your mind is a thought of practice arises. And you keep on practicing. Maybe you increase to 11 hours and 12 hours and 14 and 15. And so you never know what I'm gonna make you do. But eventually you get to the point where your practice is no longer a practice for you. It becomes your life.
It becomes a way of life. That's
yes.
the way it is.
Yes. Okay, so that's better, isn't it? Right now you're talking about a regular life and you say, 10 minutes of crossing my legs. Gosh, I wish I could get away with even less than that, okay? And who's going to know anyway if I don't cross my legs?
You will.
Okay?
You know what you're doing.
No, you know it. No, it doesn't matter who else knows. You know it yourself.
You person.
Yeah.
That's right.
You know it. Okay. But then you get to the point where you commit to say, my life is practice now, because this is what my life is about. Practice. Okay? So now your entire life is practice, and with maybe half an hour of non-practice time, of selfish time, maybe a few hours of selfish time. Nothing wrong with that. You go down the street, you know, buy a cake and eat it, enjoy some ice cream, watch TV, listen to radio, gab with your friend. Personal time. It's all right. But your mind is still differentiation between practice and non-practice time, right? And you keep on working at it until your mind no longer differentiates between practice and non-practice time. Okay? You don't bitch about it anymore. Or brag about it. Let's face it. You go from bitching to bragging. Basically. Okay? And you keep going at it until you don't even think about practice anymore. Totally.
You just do it.
Just do it. That's the state of a sage. You transcend the discrimination part of your mind. So don't talk about that state until you examine yourself. How many non-practice time do I have versus practice time?
Oh, yeah, true. It is the truth.
It is words and non-words. When you reach that state, okay, it transcends words. That's what in Chan we refer to it as the path of words ends, is terminated. It leads nowhere, it stops in the middle of space. It just disappears. No more words than describe it. Okay? And cultivation, that is cultivation and non-cultivation. Those who understand are near to it, those who are confused are far away indeed. It is not accessible by the path of language, it is not hindered by physical objects. If you are off by a hair's breadth, you will lose it in an instant. So you can describe that state of is and is by language. That's why the using language to describe is very confusing. I was confused for a long, long time because of that. I was attached to the language. It's nonsense. I was so confused and so scared for a long, long time, really. I committed to living a life where I understood nothing. You know, I have this room full of bookcases of Buddhist teachings that I didn't understand. It's a scary thought. Think about it. Why? Because I was attached to the language. I wanted to understand what the words meant. And you can't. The words are only meant for you to give you a sense of direction. Can't describe that final destination. It's just there. It's not hindered by physical objects. Nothing physical. It's nothing you can touch, can feel, can see. Emptiness. And it's very important. This is a very important part because it's very important to have the right sense of direction, because if you aim, you off at the start, just a tiny bit, you end up very far, far, far from it. And that's the fallacy of the non-Buddhist practices. They invest so much time, okay, in their practice. You cannot say that they're not dedicated as we are. They're very dedicated, even more. Like those Brahmins. They sit there and contemplate empty space day after day after day after day. Why? Because their end goal is so far off from our end goal. The more kung fu they attain, the further away it is. So much more difficult for them to adjust the course.
Is that because of arrogance? Because the more firm rider you think you are?
The more kung fu you have, the less willing you are to listen.
Yes. That.
You don't listen. Okay. Because
not
kung fu, the samadhi, brings with it an enormous amount of knowledge, additional knowledge. Enormous amount of knowledge. Okay? You know so much more than before. And you're changing your knowledge even more than what you first came to me. And you stuck with my knowledge of what I thought I knew you then. You see what I'm saying? That's why you don't listen to your teacher anymore. He said, I know a lot more than he thought I do. He thinks I do nowadays. Because my knowledge is more than he described to me. See what I mean? I tell you, teach you these things, and they all said one day, he said, hey, I'm giving my light already. He never taught me that, right? Does that mean I don't know about it? I don't teach you doesn't mean I don't know about it. And yet, because you discovered this knowledge, your wisdom by yourself, you said, I know about this, and he didn't tell me about it. Okay? Therefore, I know a lot of things that he doesn't know. That's true. There are a lot of things I don't know about. But the important ones I do know about. Only the important ones. They're important to you. Okay? And therefore, the arrogance jumps right in and says, see, there's so much more he doesn't know about me. What does he know about me? Of course, who cares about you? you watch the movie for 2 hours and go away. You don't think about the actress. You don't think about Richard Gere. You don't think about Scarlett Johansson. You know, it's 2 hours. That's all you got. Right? Who cares? You have your life to live. And because of that, the self is so much more self-assured of itself. See, I know a lot more every day. I am unfolding my wisdom so much more. And so one day you decide for yourself that he doesn't know. I think I know more than he does. You reach a state that is referred to in the Sharangama Sutra as the Skanda demon state. Think you know more than your teacher when you fall. If your end goal, if you cultivate with the wrong purpose, you're going to end up so far away from where you want to be, where you should be. For example, I have a student who came to me and wanted to learn spiritual powers from me, only learn, gain kung fu from me. Okay? I teach. You want kung fu? I teach you kung fu. It's up to you. Whatever you want out of your life. Okay? It's what you want. It's not what I want. My job is to remind you something called Buddhahood. Okay? That's the direction you ought to go. And you say, okay, sounds good, but I think I like to go to the heavens first. Nothing wrong with that. That's what you want to go. That's what you're gonna go. You may not admit it to yourself. Okay? And that's what happened to my father. All of us are trained in the Mahayana to go to strive for rebirth in the Western Bliss Pyramid. The Asian culture, that's what we are, that's one of our important heritages. Okay? It's easier for the people in the Asian culture to believe in the rebirth than you Westerners. And so we believe that rebirth is the best deal for us. This lifetime, that's the best effort for us to do, okay? But deep down in our psyche, we also learn about, as you learn more later in later lectures, that, well, the heavens, they're incredibly blissful up there. It's so much fun up there. You have spiritual powers. You can fly. You live in palaces. The women are so gorgeous, okay? You have so much wealth that he said, it's kind of nice, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wouldn't it be cool to be able to fly to Paris and for lunch and then come back?
Yeah. I'll do that.
And because of that greed, the seed of greed in your mind, when you die, that's when those seeds will mature. That's why in Mahayana, it's very the death time is very important for us, because that's when you ought to seek help. That's why the Buddhist. A lot of Buddhist people are making money off it, because they sell those help at death time. Like Fa Yin Temple, Dharma Seal Temple in San Gabriel.
Oh, uh-huh. Yeah.
So the temple called Dharma Seal Temple. They have more followers than Gold Wheel Temple, because the food is better. It's a bigger temple. And people are a lot more courteous than Gold Wheel Temple. They have a lot of Gold Wheel Temple's faithful. They move over to the Dharma Seal Temple because the Dharma Seal have a bigger library, have much better customer service, much better food. Okay? Mm-hmm. And what the temple thrives on is the death Dharma. They buy, they sell those plaques and they sell those services.
Does it work though?
Of course it works.
Then what's wrong with following it if it works?
It's just like you. What do you want? You want a car you get from Rent-A-Wreck, or you want to buy a brand new Ferrari? Which one can you afford? The truth of the matter is, which one can you afford? They ran a wreck. See, I rest my case. You don't have the money, don't talk to me about the Toyotas. Because in your mind, he says, I can only afford a rent a wreck.
But I like the Ferrari.
I like the Ferrari, I know about them, but I can only afford a rent a wreck. It takes me to places.
You have to have transportation.
So you may have a little bit more problems, but that Dharma is a Dharma that creates the seeds, okay? But it does not necessarily bring you there right away.
Oh.
Okay? And there are always cases of people who have the blessings already. Okay? What do you think? That everyone can afford to buy a Ferrari or a Toyota? Well, you gotta have, you know, give people who can only afford, you know, the junk. So what happens is that all these dharmas are available for those people as well. It's just the same as, let's say, you guys reciting the Buddha's name versus a group of kindergarten children reciting the Buddha's name. What's the difference? It's all the Buddha's name, isn't it? It's Amitabha, Amitabha. They sound probably better than you guys do. But which one has more power? Difference.
So the Sangha hoped that Dharma Seal had less kung fu. Less kung fu. Is that what you're talking about? Or
absolutely. It's not as effective. Because if you have any real kung fu, you have your own temple already, and that includes me. Okay. You have any real accomplishment, you have your own temple. You don't need to go and work for someone else. Because that temple is owned by a couple of lay people, a husband and wife. And he hires monks and nuns to do the service. He pays
them. Hires?
Basically, yeah. The woman who does the nun who used to do the ceremonies there, she does a real good job, gets paid $100 every single day.
Oh.
Nothing.
I didn't realize something like that.
They make a living out of it, and they do a good job. I mean, they really do a good job, because what happens is that it's a referral business. When you die, what do you know? You're gonna ask the people you know, right? And they have this family kind of own business tradition where they have referrals already. And it works fine. There's nothing wrong with them. I don't mean to criticize them. I'm saying that is available to the people who have access to it. They're not going to know about the DRBA. They can't care less about the DRBA. Who are they? A bunch of crazies. Eating one meal a day, you think you're special or something? You know, that's the normal reaction. Whereas it's these people, they have the channel of distribution already. And they do real good business of that. And they're doing good. Okay? They're really doing a lot of good for the people who can afford that kind of service. Okay? All right, anything else? Section 19.
Isn't that the precepts of the lay people making a living?
Yeah.
That's a big no-no, right?
Big problem.
Because they're making a living off of the Buddhas and then hiring Sangha. That's
a big
bad retribution, I think, when
it's life. It's stealing from temple jewel.
Oh,
yeah.
It's like one of the teachings.
You just like in Taiwan, you know, all the people that do the fortune telling, a lot of them are blind.
Yeah.
You know what? That's a retribution. That's a retribution in the Buddhist teaching.
I mean, from something that they did past life.
Because you're using your spiritual power or your teaching, like the I Ching, to tell heaven's future. So the next life you come back, you don't have regular eyes. So these things, it's not a small thing, you know, when you think about it. People, they're hiring Sangha to make that kind of, make money off the Buddhism. The retribution is very big.
Yeah, it's very severe.
Oh, it's
very
huge. Severe. It's like you can't get out of there.
Yeah.
Everything is a cause and effect. Everything that happens, like the Master said, is it unfair? It's really not unfair. It's just that we don't like we get it because it's not a blessing. It's a karmic retribution. If we like it, say, yeah, I deserve it. But how about something being us? I didn't deserve that. Think about it.
There's nothing to do with this. There's nothing.
There's always an effect, cause and effect. Everything, single thing you do, whether you like it or not. You may not like what you're hearing, but I can't help it.
Negative.
Whatever you do carries with it a consequence.
Newton said that too.
Force equals reaction. You can't escape it. But Newton is only true on Earth.
He was physical action and reaction, but I just, you know, it's discovered time and time again.
Yeah, no, it's a formulation of the law of cause and effect. The forcible reaction is only still has limited domain.
But
cause and effect has has no boundaries. Whatever you do, you have to pay for it eventually. And if you intend to do it, if you do it on purpose, it comes back to you a lot quicker than you think. A lot quicker. Remember the thing? Do not harm a sage. Sages cannot be harmed. It's out of goodness to us. Do not harm others. It comes back to you a lot quicker than you think. Especially when you try to harm a sage. Oh my, oh boy. It's just like bouncing right back. You feel it a lot quicker. Everything we do has a consequence. So these folks here, they make a lot of money, they do a decent living of it, and they're successful business people, but under the Buddha Dharma is considered stealing from us, because they disguise themselves as doing Buddhist work. They disguise themselves as helping others cross over, doing the rebirth thing.
But they're actually doing it, so isn't that part of...
They're executing, they're making money off the execution of the Dharma. And what happens, all those Dharmas are, that rebirth Dharma is designed for what? For, it's meant to be an offering of the faithful to the Triple Jewel. Not making money. It's not making money. Is one of the few things that the Mahayana created as an expedient for the faithful to make an offering, because at that time it is so important. What happens at that time? Typically, people have a feast in this country. They have a feast, they drink, they have a merry time, right? They buy a band, they spend a lot of money in the coffin, all those things, okay? And all those things are wrong. They're all wrong. When someone dies, you probably should abstain from eating meat for some time. Whereas these people go and have a feast, they kill pigs, they buy meat, and they enjoy themselves, they drink, okay? So they are inflicting pain on living beings to celebrate someone's death. And who pays the price? They all pay the price, including the deceased. Okay? So, instead of, when someone dies, you are supposed to create merit and virtue on that person's behalf. The beauty of the Dharma is right there. Okay? The person who is deceased needs help. Okay? And therefore, this is a chance for them to go to a temple and seek help on behalf of the deceased. Alright? And by purchasing a plaque and those services, okay, you actually are making an offering and asking for help.
Even if that person is not a Buddhist?
If the person is not a Buddhist, you do not have to be a Buddhist to ask for help. What are we? Some kind of cruel people who says, I only save my own kind? No. You come to us and say, hey, please, the disease is in trouble. I want to seek help on the deceased's behalf. Okay? Whoever that person is, could be a cockroach even, could be a dog even. Absolutely. So you make an offering, say, I know this is the kind of thing where you need, when someone dies, you're supposed to make an offering on the behalf of the deceased to create merit and virtues. Okay? So that's why the expedient was created, so that you come and purchase the service, because that is then, to us, is an offering. Okay? And the offering and the comes in the terms of a request. You say, I make this offering, but please dedicate it for this kind of effort for us. So far, so good. So you're creating merit and virtue, first of all, for yourself, because you are doing it on, so you're leveraging it, right? The recipient receives the benefit, and you also receive benefit because you are the sponsor. So everyone benefits from that, okay? And in the process, so the temple people then execute the Dharma, okay, to help with the process. The Dharma can be executed by anyone. It doesn't necessarily have to be a left home person. That's why you go to Taiwan, they have huge businesses with the dead. You know that? They have people walking around. Every time you go to a funeral, you see people looking just like monks. The only thing you can tell they're not monks is that they have hair on their head. And they hit the bell, and they chant, they even do a better job chanting than the monks and the nuns. They're experts, they're professionals. That's what they do all day. They're professional people. And they go from funeral to funeral, and they perform the ceremonies. Okay?
Does it actually help the dead?
So what happens? During ceremony, you recite the sutra and recite a mantra. He says, hey, ghost, please be kind to this deceased, right? That's what the mantra may say. And the ghost is looking at him, who are you to tell me what to do? So what happens? Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Not only that, these people who do these ceremonies, they end up being very sick. It's a big mess they don't know about. They have no business meddling to other people's death thing, because you make a lot of money. Just Dharma Seal Temple, they make a lot of money. And they don't know what they're getting into.
What if they did a public confession?
May not be enough. May not be enough. Because what happens is that, so never mind about a lot of aspects, but look at the fact that these people, this Dharma is created as an offering on the deceased's behalf to the Triple Jewel, right? So what happens? These people actually are receiving the money. They're not passing it on the Triple Jewel. They put it in their own pocket. So what are they doing? They're stealing from the Triple Jewel, first of all. Right? Because the Dharma says, please, Triple Jewel, help me. The Dharma is created by us, by the Sangha, for that they come to us and ask for help, and make an offering to us, and dedicate an offering to help, for us to help them, okay, to execute that very Dharma. All the merit and virtues of the offerings will accrue to the execution of the Dharma itself, okay? So it's an offering, a Triple Jewel, and these people then would build a temple and say, Dharma Seal Temple, so we are the Triple Jewel, aren't we? So you come to us and make an offer, buy a service from us, so you're making an offering. This is the same as going to Long Beach Monastery, you know? Hey, you see a monk doing the ceremony, don't you? You know? And they're even more friendly than the monks and nuns at Long Beach Monastery. That makes you feel better about the money you spend on them. So they are stealing from the Triple Jewel. They are lying to the public. They're putting up a false facade. It's on purpose. Okay. Remember, when I talk about these things, you have to differentiate between the two of them. There's always good and always bad in all things. What I was talking about earlier is a good thing about the Dharma itself. Whether the Dharma is executed by a monk or a nun or a layperson, they all have the benefits of the execution of the Dharma. All right? It's the car, for goodness sake. The car will take you somewhere. Right? So, but on the other hand, what's happening at that temple, in many temples, many places in out there is that they are putting up a false facade, okay? And therefore, they're conning. It's a con thing. It's a con job. They're fooling people into thinking that they are receiving help from the Triple Jewel. Okay? And they make an offering to the Triple Jewel. So they're stealing from the Triple Jewel, they're also stealing from the people who come to them for business.
Are they stealing the Dharma too?
What?
The Dharma.
Stealing the Dharma by representing it and doing the...
Yeah. We can go on forever. There's so many things wrong there.
Okay.
It's such a terrible thing to do. The last thing you want to do is what they're doing. It's criminal. They pay, you know, eventually. They will pay.
So where do you go to get this? That's
go where you know. You go where you know. What else can you do?
I don't know.
You see? You go to a church. You say, please help me in my funerals. And that itself, that fact itself, that Dharma itself has some goodness in it. Because they give you a eulogy and they talk about good and that kind of thing. And they soothe your soul and make it easier for you and your family. There's some goodness in that, okay? But that's not enough to overcome the karmic retributions. But that, again, it goes back to blessings. If you haven't planted a seeds of blessings in the past, you won't hear about it. You won't hear about it. Venerable Shenhua. You won't hear about Mahayana. Leave alone talk about coming, asking for help. How many of Venerable Shenhua's disciples know that they should come to him for help? Especially that time. Because he transmitted a Dharma that's very, very effective. Not many people. Let me tell you, when I was in Canada at Venerable Shenhua's temple, Avatamsaka temple, every month, see, I did it grudgingly, but every month I would have people come to me and get a rebirth flag. Every single month, me as a shami. And they probably that's a lot of money for them because they don't have a lot of activities going on. So every month they would go and somehow even although I didn't want to do it, people would come and get a plaque. Even the people who are not disciples of his. Somehow they went around the temple, they talked to a lot of temple, and then they decided, this is the kind of place, this is the place where I want to do it with. And we are not the least expensive one. We are the more expensive one. Yeah, even more expensive nowadays. A lot more. A lot more. And the funny thing is that the funny thing is that people see, the funny thing is that it never was explained to his own disciples. See, I explained it to you. I explained why the nature of Dharma, you know, it's really an offering, it's not a service. Okay? It's service to you Westerners. Okay? It's service to the people who are not that blessed, they say, they come and they buy, oh, so this is so expensive, I can go to another temple and buy cheaper. And you go to another temple, buy cheaper, go to Dharma Steel, it's much cheaper there too. Okay? No problem, go there. At least you're planting the seeds for rebirth. At least you're getting a rent-a-wreck. At least you're getting a car. At least you're going that direction. Okay? But see, I explain it to you because I'm not happy that the Yagye is not doing a good job explaining it. They don't need it. You think that those flags are making money off those flags? There's a lot more hassle than it's worth. A lot more. If you look into the kind of expenses, the kind of time is spent on executing all these dharmas, okay, for all those flags, okay, you can't afford it. Don't talk alone about the benefits. I'm talking about the manpower and the expenses involved in doing those dharmas. You can't afford it. But on top of it, you have these people who have some kung fu. Some of them are even enlightened already, and they executing those dharmas on your behalf. How much money you think you're supposed to pay for that? You can't afford it either. It's an honor. It's an incredible amount of blessings you're using up when you go to them. Are you kidding me? For me to have a monk, a nun from the DRBA, to go to my father's funeral, okay? To attend the ceremony for his funeral is something that I cannot repay. You know that? That's why whatever went wrong in the past between me and them is all erased. I owe them now. What can I do? I have to wait until their parents die.
Keep paying.
Then I go over and make up for it. Because the kind of blessings that they can generate is incredible on the deceased's behalf. See, the regular folks only see, oh, this black costs so much at Dharma Seal, therefore it's cheaper than the city of 10,000 Buddhas. That's what I want. Okay, it's more reasonable. That's fine. But if they ask the deceased, they might get a different opinion. But that goes back to the amount of blessings that the deceased has. If you don't accrue your blessings now, when you die, who's going to accrue it for you? So I'm not happy that they are increasing the prices, not educate about the Dharma. It's not about the price, it's about the Dharma. I don't care if they only do it because they have their own faithful already. Their reputation is so established, so entrenched now, because they have a track record now of being able to help people without Vignal Srinivas' help. That's why they increase the price. You know that? They're not dumb.
No, I thought I was told that they ran out of space assisting people for those presses.
They ran out of space, and as well as why do they run out of space?
Same thing.
People show why.
It works.
Yeah, same thing.
It works. It will keep on coming, and more people ask for help. Because it works. Even without Vimo Shenhua around. So what does it tell you? These guys have real kung fu. So what do? They raise the price. What does it do? It traces that faithful way. If I were them, I raise the price and say, this is why we're doing this, but that has a problem, doesn't it? You are justifying your own greed, aren't you?
Yes.
So who has to explain it? I have to explain it.
No, it's okay. If they raise the price, then you know, people are not sincere, they won't put the money up too.
That's fine. No, it's blessings.
It's a test of sincerity too.
It's a bound of blessings. Yeah. But the point is that it's about education. It's about helping others understand. It's about giving Dharma, right? So they open themselves up and say, okay, I have this Dharma here, okay, that they make it more and more affordable for the regular people and not explain it. So they're not giving the gift of Dharma itself. That gift of Dharma is not complete. I would train them, the nuns and the monks in the temples to explain the preacher dharma. And if after they explain the dharma and people don't believe, that's fine. But at least you explain it to them. Just like I've been explaining this dharma to my students for the last year, and the first reaction is, this guy is after our money. That's okay. It's nothing wrong with that. Okay, that's a common mistake. Okay, common reaction. But at least you hear about it. You hear about the dharma, so that in the future you understand. You hear it often enough, you understand what's it about. These guys doing nothing. That's how well entrenched they are.
They don't do any dharma at all.
They don't need to explain it. Who cares? Why, how can a nun who hardly speaks English explain to you about? They even have a hard time explaining the different offerings. Leave alone why the offering, because the first reaction people will say, "You're trying to get my money." How can we as Sangha people tell you that you're really are making an offering, and you're asking us to execute that kind of dharma and dedicate all this offering here for the rebirth dharma only? It really increases the chance of rebirth, chances of rebirth of the deceased for whatever dharma they're executing. Okay? That's the nature of that. And how can we do that?
That's right.
It's very difficult.
That's right, it's very difficult.
All right. Anything else? And that's why the regular people would go to the Dharma Seal Temple or the other people they know, because it's more affordable and so on. And that's the way it goes. But it has to start with a small group like this, where I explain it to you, so that you, in the future, you're given a chance, you explain it to the people you know. That's about all you can do. Oh yeah.
That's the part. What do you do with that?
Well, the same thing works in Master Shenhua. Master Shenhua, you see, the nature of the Dharma is really, really kind of interesting, because when he was around, you come to him and he helped you just like that. You don't need to buy, you don't need to do anything, because he's, the structure is there is for the maintenance of the temples, okay? Because really, the DRBA temples, they don't have any really income at all. The only income they do is through very limited set of services and people making offerings. They come in, they like the temple, and they say, okay, $5 here, $2 there, that's fine. Okay, and that's not enough. It's not enough at all. It turns out the major source of income is what? You know what? It's not those services. Those services are pittance. They're nothing in the scheme of things. They cannot live off those things. The real source of income is their Dharma protectors. They go there and they say, oh, these guys are real cultivators, and I have excess money, I need to plant my blessings, I know I'm using up my blessings, therefore I want to plant my blessings for my future. So they give away the money. They give millions, houses, buildings, cars. So when you look at the services they on that list they have there,
it's nothing.
It's not enough to cover the expenses. Heat alone in the city, 10,000 Buddhas every month in the winter time. How much they pay? Thousands, maybe $10,000 in heat. That's because they burn a lot of wood already. They have a lot of trees, so they cut the trees, the fallen trees, not the new ones, the fallen trees, they cut it and they burn it in the wood stoves. They don't use gas or electricity. And they still spend that much money. Okay. So the real source support for them is really their Dharma protectors. okay, who think. But so they really don't need the services. Venerable Shenhua created the services so that we can tie affinities with our supporters. So it's like I have you walk back there to tie your affinities with that cricket, because who knows, the next time it might become a pretty important person, a VIP, and you can come to it and say, remember me? I decided for you. And it knows. You know that? It's registered in its eighth consciousness that you resided for it when it died.
But we didn't know that, so our intention wasn't resigning for him.
That's right. But you, at least you help. You planted the seeds of the Buddha recitation when it died. Whether it likes it or not. Just like, for example, you have someone who doesn't believe in Buddhism, okay, who dies. They say, so what do? You say, according to what I know, rebirth is the best deal for this guy. So let me buy a service on his behalf and for his rebirth. And the guy hates Buddhism. He says Buddha is probably the biggest farce in the whole world. Okay, so what? The merit and virtue of the execution of Dharma and the merit and virtue of the offering still goes to him, whether he likes it or not. So you are really, really forcing the issue. And guess what? He's going to be so grateful in the future. That's why the Dharma was created and expedient to help living beings. Okay? And also, we are, when we execute those dharmas, we also learn in the process as well, which is another aspect of the lesson, of the dharma. It's so wonderful, the Mahayana teaching. Anyway, any last questions? We need to wrap it up here today. Yeah, so. Mahayana, he thinks Buddha is a farce. So, but we ought to give when we can.
That's right.
Whether they believe it or not, makes no difference. September 3rd,
Labor Day.
Mm-hmm.
Monday.
In Hawaii or here?
Hawaii.
He came here and sat there.
Yeah, right here with Heather.
And we
had to talk
here. He had multiple glioma brain cancers.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, he has one brain tumor and then all of a sudden has five more tumors. Yeah. Like a fist. Like a claw. And it got worse and worse. It's one of the cases where he could have been saved had he had a little bit more faith. But that's the lesson that he helped teach is that, what Guimu Shenhua said, those who have faith will be saved. He didn't have enough, so it's his dad, his father-in-law, forced the issue. So it happened to him pretty terrible. The guy was ready to die. He wanted to die.
No, he wanted to die.
And, he was scared a little bit. Mm-hmm. This part, the part where he's kind of scared of death. But then he felt it was hopeless. Mm-hmm. Doctors gave up on him.
Yeah, he wasn't expected to live that long.
Right. So
they told him it was terminal.
So there's nothing that the doctors could do. So he was his mind was set on dying. He accepted the fact that he was dying. Whereas he really wasn't really seeking help. Came to it because his wife and his father-in-law sort of forced the issue because his wife was going nuts, going berserk. Threatened to kill herself if he died. And so what happened is that he came here and Ralph was also all upset because his daughter was going crazy. So he forced the issue, and so we prolonged his life a little bit longer than he expected, which is a terrible thing to do.
With that kind of
thing. Yeah, it hurts a lot, and the guy, so he wanted to die, but we sort of prolonged his life a little bit longer for him, because his father-in-law meddled. So it's the wrong thing to do, really, because it leads to nowhere. But Guimu Shenhua is different. You know, if you have time, sit down and I talk to you about that if you like. Or you can talk about it next time. But the thing is that Guimu Shenhua is very easy. In the past, if you were lucky enough, you come to him and that's it. You ask for help, he gives you help. Okay? He never asks you why. I have a different attitude because my skills are much more limited. If you ask for help, usually I ask you why you want to help. If you want to help so that you can keep on doing the same thing you've been doing before, there's no point in helping. Because if I help you, you only keep on committing more offenses. Right?
Yeah.
That's what happens. If you ask for help, you should want help because in the hope that you have more time or a chance to make changes. You're not going to change, there's no sense in helping. So this guy here, his life was prolonged and then he simply wasted his time. He's wasted his blessings. So he got nothing out of it. His wife got not much out of it. His father-in-law got nothing out of it. Even more disdain and contempt for the help he received, okay? And his wife even came out of it a non-believer either. It's a terrible thing.
You mean Heather?
Huh?
You mean Heather? Heather, I heard that during the last couple of months, the couple constantly fought.
Yeah.
Martin and Heather just couldn't get along.
Yeah.
correcting to each other.
Because they're not sincere in asking help. You always get what you want, okay? They came and really weren't sincere, didn't have the faith. In the end, they have some affinities, created some affinities with Mahayana, but not enough that they're supposed to get out of it. For example, Ralph should have got a lot more out of it. Every single drastic event in your life is really a decision point for you. Right. If you choose the wrong path, you soar. You elevate. You choose the right path, you fall. Ralph chose the wrong path. What he should have got more, a lot more out of it, is that a little bit more faith in Mahayana, its powers. Okay? Should be a lot less full of himself, less arrogant. Okay? And if he could do those things, and for example, he could have then have had a chance, the best thing he could do for his son-in-law is right now, is get a plan for his son. That's the best thing he could do for him. Listen, you spend the rest of your life making more money. Money will come your way. Whatever amount of money you make here, this is a chance for him to do something for his son-in-law that will last a lifetime. And that is not, and this is also something that Josepha is also at fault. Faith is not.
Josepha mentioned that recently Rao has a huge turn books about like God is dead and there's no such thing as, you know, God harming her because of his totally
changed from what way? Which direction?
He doesn't believe in anything, period.
And so why is he reading?
He's reading books against spiritual beliefs. Recently, on a bestseller list, there are two or three books about, you know, what harm has
been
created by religion.
Do you know why?
Why?
Because his wife asked for help. Without asking. Because what happened between Josepha and me caused a lot of problems in Ralph. He's protective of his wife. You see, the stupidity that goes on. You see what I mean? You see, Josepha, I'm not saying bad, okay? When I bring up people's example, you know what's the effect it has? These people are helping me speak Dharma for you. The benefit, the merit, virtue also goes to them. Just like this guy here.
This guy here.
I used to pick on him on purpose. Why? Because I gave Josepha a chance to make offerings to my Dharma, to accrue her blessings. But I never gave him a chance, did I? Remember the first year? First couple of classes? I never gave you any chance.
Offering in terms of?
Planting his blessings. What do you think? Every time you make an improvement, how much blessings are you using up? Think about it. Is it free? And I told him it's free. And he believed that. So what did I do? I picked on him because I used him to teach her and you guys. I beat up on him to test him as well, to teach Josepha that it's coming, girl. Better brace yourself, it's coming. Because if you think you're better than Mel, and Mel's lower level than you, I still beat up on him more than I beat up on you. Okay, better wake up, because it's coming. And as soon as I beat up on her, she ran away from me. She got pissed off. This guy got pissed off.
What do you mean by beat up on her? I don't understand the term.
Well, eventually you understand. I promise.
When he starts beating up on me, and he starts beating up on you,
like
you'll know what he means.
You know, at home when they give you Ling Gok.
You understand? Ling Gok, of course, mommy give me Ling Gok all the time.
Yeah, well, you understand, Chinese understand Ling Gok. That's why you say Ling Gok. But the Ling Gok is not physical. It's a Chinese thing.
It's a time thing.
I got it.
And you know, it's very early on, I chose to beat up on Mel because this guy could take it. This guy is a fool. A normal person would have left a long time ago. And I chose to beat on him because I'm hoping he wouldn't leave. He's an idiot. A normal person would leave.
You told me I should have been gone.
Should have been gone. No. You're not normal at all.
He has a
because anyone with a sense of self-worth, a sense of wisdom, I said, but you should come with age as well. Because I told him, I said, I'm sure you've seen guys like me, at least 1,000 guys like me already. Okay? Whatever I can dream up in terms of worldly dharma to pull wool over your eyes, I won't be able to because you've seen it all. Isn't that true? Come on, this guy is a businessman. He's out there, you know, dealing with people every day. I'm a green guy compared to him in terms of dealing with people. I'm Vietnamese. I don't know anything about this American culture. I wasn't born here. I only went to school here and college, and that's it. What do I know about your culture? How can I hope to con him for very long?
I've been
con him for a few times.
I didn't stay here for any of that at all.
See, so that is off the table. You know, that's not what's going to keep him here. Okay, so. This guy is so crazy. You know, he comes here and takes a beating from me, you know, in and out every day. And then Josefa, he said, "Ooh, I'm so glad it's me, it's not me, him and not me."
That's right.
Wrong lesson learned. She said, "You should look at him and reflect on yourself. Why did I scold him in front of everyone? Why did I embarrass him in front of everyone? Why doesn't he quit?" And that's a real lesson. Not, "Oh, I'm glad I stayed out of trouble this time." See, that's the normal reaction, isn't it?
Yeah.
"I'm glad it's Mel. Poor Mel. Oh, I'm so glad it's Mel and not me."
That's what Ralph used to tell me. He said, "Boy, you should take a beating."
Oh yeah, he was so proud.
I'm glad it's you. And
yeah. All lessons. And it, you know what? Just like this sutra, the 42 section says, water rises imperceptibly before it's too late for it. Josefa has been committing offenses after offenses after offenses after offenses, thinking that I don't know a lot of things. Only the things that matter in her progress I know.
I've known her for 2 years and I'm not aware of...
Of course not. You're not a teacher. You don't have that relationship. The only thing I care about when you spend time, okay, is that how far along are you in your path of cultivation? Which mistakes are you making? Which are the right things you're doing or the wrong things you're doing? I correct the wrong things, I ignore the right things. That's why you don't hear a lot of praises from me. It's the wrong thing, the offenses you commit that will pull you down, that will derail you, not things. Telling you about your right things only makes you more arrogant. Mistakes after mistakes. Okay? Again, this is only dharma for your sake.
Could you
example, duplicity.
Pardon me?
Duplicity. Telling me that, "Master, I'm grateful for your teaching," and turning around to Janine and putting a lot of venom and viper into her system. Janine is very upset with me.
Speech.
Janine doesn't have enough blessing, she can quit as well. Janine is very upset with me for a long, long time. Isn't that right?
You're probably using too big of adjectives, but she's Josepha's friend.
Of course, she has to come to her friend's aid.
A lot, and she thinks you're criticizing her.
I'll tell you another example.
And I don't think you're criticizing her. I do not think that. I think that you see things.
She's not important for me to criticize.
But what do you care? What do you care? You don't care.
Another thing she's doing that's very wrong is that Terry, for example.
Who? Huh?
Terry Hatch, whatever his name, Terry McDowell.
The nun.
She's a very sick woman.
Terry, from the Chan class.
We know she's told a class that she had breast cancer.
Stage 4 breast cancer. Yeah. It's terminal.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she's losing her battle.
Yeah.
Josepha couldn't help her.
Well, there's no way she could help her.
Of course, her dharma isn't strong enough. She could have come to, let's say, the Qigong master, he probably could relieve her. Josepha may be at 8th samadhi. The level samadhi is only, like again, an elevator shaft. Okay? You don't have a lot of powers yet. But that guy, 7th level samadhi, has a lot of powers.
Which guy are you talking about?
The Qigong grandmaster.
Her Chilo Qigong grandmaster?
Yeah, whatever, the guy. She used to bow to his master.
Dr. Chen.
Who?
His name is Chen.
Yeah, the Chinese guy.
The guy who certified her to be a Qigong teacher.
That's right. Okay. Yes. Okay. She took
a class about her teacher. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, why am I recording this? This is.